we got food. We're cooking.
And food. So come on down, St. George Auto Gallery. Check out the deals. Check out the cars. We'll see you here.
Typically when at war, a country doesn't invite the enemy to live with him. Just saying. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
You believe that the Constitution's the best document in political history?
Greatest political document ever.
There you go.
Thank you.
I want to know, how is it possible to believe that when it's based on racist principles? They describe indigenous peoples as merciless Indian savages. They don't describe African Americans as full people, and they don't even recognize other people of color and other minorities that we see today. So I just want to know how you think it's possible to believe that's such a great document we're founded
upon. Thank you for
upon.
The question. Where does it say that in the document? No, keep her. Where does it say that in the document?
I'm sorry, what?
Where does it say what you said in the actual document?
I'm not entirely sure,
but... It doesn't.
No,
He's exactly right. He is exactly right. Charlie Kirk answering a college student, and boy, don't you hear that all the time? And did you hear her talk about, in a surety, oh, it says all of these things. Absolutely, it doesn't. And I'm so glad that he did that, and I'm so glad that the audience got it, that the Constitution does not say those things, and that we really are at war for just utter stupidity because people don't read the document. And I'm going to guess that she didn't, so whatever student that was. I welcome you back to the Kate Daly Show, last hour on a Friday, and I have Susan Reeve with me, which is always going to be fun.
Hello.
Because we're going to go in a lot of directions. But I want to dovetail off of what I was just talking about in the last hour, and that was bringing up a couple of things that go on in foreign politics before we see problems with other countries, the CIA involvement. Mike Pompeo was recorded as saying, well, yeah, the CIA lies, cheats, and steals, and even murders, so, because that's what he had said later, was even murders. So what's the problem? I mean, my gosh, we have training courses on it. What's the problem? And people were cheering. They were honestly cheering. It was kind of sickening that the audience was cheering that. And so that brings us to talking a little bit about Sri Lanka, however you want to say it, and the bombing there, and also the events that are going on right now. And so, Susan, I'm going to turn this to you because I was talking about Africa. Americans don't know that we are having military actions in a large quantity over in Africa. In fact, most Americans don't even know what we're doing, where, and why. But we always say it's for our interests. We never disclose what interests are. So go right ahead.
Well,
where do you want to start?
That is so true. And Africa is a fascinating country because most people are just not that familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the size of it is, it would fit China, the United States, Europe, and India into the continent of Africa. That's how big it is. That's how vast it is.
Right.
And one of the things that they are hot and heavy over on that is coltan, which I'm not sure if you've heard of it. I know you have, but it's this mineral basically that they mine, especially in the Congo, and it's one of the raw materials for your phones.
For
and
a telecom.
Your phone requires, telecom. We are back to telecom. And when people, journalists go over and they take photos of it, they go, oh my gosh, this is 500 people digging with pickaxes and like panning for gold, just like it was done in the 1800s. And they're basically using slave labor.
Yeah.
And yet these companies are worth, Microsoft is now worth $1 trillion. Mm-hmm. Apple is, hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right. And to this point, China's only been like the manufacturer under contract. So I'm kind of echoing just a little bit, Susan. Susan, are you there?
Susan,
you might want to call in from
here. Is it still echoing?
Yes.
I can try calling back.
Yes. Go ahead and hang up and try calling back. Thank you, on a different line. Thank you.
I'll
And so what she's talking about is a substance that becomes part of our, it's used in our phones. And we were just, I was just talking about the telecom business. Keep your eye on this, because when telecom companies are coming in into certain countries and making certain agreements and all these things are kind of going on with Apple, you'll see the headlines quite a bit. You'll see the headlines on this. There's a substance in Africa that is being mined that is using this substance. And there's just things that are just little ties where everything sort of kind of comes together, right? Because this is what I'm noticing, too, and I know you are, too. And all of a sudden, we have all these military actions over in Africa. What in the world's going on? So talk about this substance.
Yes. Well, you know, I was kind of tipped into this when, you remember Mugabe, who was this huge dictator in Uganda for like 40 years.
Right.
And there was a student who was over there, and she had texted something negative about him. She was an American student. And then she was taken into custody, and she was held for 2 days. So here was this American student, and all she had done was texted something negative about him. Well, he was out of power 3 days later. And I thought, you know, 40 years, then he's out of power. It was super peaceful. We're just switching him out for the next guy. And I thought, that was a Donald Trump move. You don't kidnap and or hold, you know, Americans and not have a consequence like that. And you recognize that we do have a really big influence, but so does China. China is all over the continent. It's putting in infrastructure for free, quote-unquote. But a lot of this infrastructure, especially hotels and whatnot, are wired for surveillance. I mean, the Chinese do not do anything for free and out of the goodness of their hearts. That is not their ethos. So Africa, it's just not on most people's radar, and yet it's having this really disproportionate influence on the fact that we communicate with this important element that is mined in very, you know, small quantities and small locations in Africa. So, of course, you know, there's just a lot going on over there.
And also, I want to mention, just because you just said that, and I was going to get into this today, but I don't know if we'll have time to, is the fact that you talked about surveillance. Surveillance, data, telecom, it's all kind of coming together, isn't it? It's kind of strange. But you were talking about being wired for surveillance. And they there was an article today talking about the feds dropping porn cases, because if they go, if they move forward on the porn cases and pedophilia porn, all these things, they have to disclose then a lot of surveillance that's going on that that was never okay, that we have never, that we didn't know was going
on. That would never, the public would be very worried about. That's a really, it's a strange article. It's a it's like, really, after all this effort, and we know what bad, creepy people these are who traffic in pornography, and it's kidnapped kids, and I mean, it's a sex trafficking. And yet they're dropping the cases. So I always wonder, what is really behind that information? What's really going on down there? But the surveillance, I can see why, if they have bigger fish to fry, if it's major, major people, or it's people who are corrupt and want the trafficking. So I don't even know what to say about that. That's it's devastating to read. I mean, you want these people, you've got them, and now you're letting them go. What is that about?
So true. And I also, I want to talk about Sri Lanka, too, because, and how that ties in, because there was a speech made and people visiting that was kind of interesting about that before it happened,
Yes, yes. It was, there were just lots of people there, lots of visitors, including this boy, Kiernan Shafritz DeZoya, who was 11 years old, and like you said, from the Sidwell School. But what I found interesting was it said he was 11, but he was interested in neuroscience and healing people's brains, and he was so interested in studying that. He was there at a banquet with his mother. But again, it happened at Easter. And it, some people have wondered, and this has been kind of a, an undercurrent chattering behind the scenes of the fact that there was a fire at Notre Dame in France, and Notre Dame hosts huge, huge Easter events. Then
there was no loss of life there. And so some people have wondered, was that the original target? But somebody said, well, then we'll just close it down. We'll find a reason to just shut it down.
Interesting.
And so that's kind of an undercurrent chatter. And so the big terror attack happened somewhere else. And hundreds of people were affected.
Right. They've lowered the number in the 200 range now. It was at 350 or 300, but still, and unfortunate. There's a lot of people though that are really speculating about that. They're speculating about a speech that was made and some individuals of the kind of I would say elite status over there right before it happened that have to do with the very thing we're talking about, and that is like telecom industries and industries that are now over there. It's very odd, all the connections within just the industries alone, right?
Yeah. And these industries, if you think of a network, a spider web, I mean, they are so interconnected. I was just reading about the one in France, actually. Its name is Orange, and it said Orange in 2008, which coincides with Obama, was given permission from Apple to sell the iPhone in Austria, Belgium, the Dominican Republic, Egypt, Jordan, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Slovakia, Switzerland, and Orange's African markets. And what I happen to know about African markets is that in some countries, people have 2 and 3 cell phones.
Right.
And you would think, why would that be the case? And it's because the electricity goes out constantly. They can't charge their phones, so they move their SIM card from phone to phone to phone. But it is how they connect with the rest of the world. And so we underestimate just how fast this network is and how these multinational corporations just work in and around each other. And why wouldn't they conspire for more power? Why wouldn't they, come up with ideas of how to either cut people out of the market or influence them, and they buy up, you know, there's a connection to news media.
Samantha Powers kind of was
sharp eye in. I remember Carlos Slim, who was in charge of the Obama phone. Forbes magazine at one point said he was the richest man in the world. He was Mexican, Carlos Slim.
Now owns New York Times. Now owns the New York Times.
And he has connections all over the world. He just bought... he has connections in Austria. So we're thinking about our local, our nation, our state, our local economy. These people are thinking global and are there and embedded. And, you know, what are they up to? And they've obviously hooked up with our government and... Very willingly.
We'll be right back. What did Samantha Powers tell Sri Lanka before that event happened? Kind of interesting, too. We'll be right back on The Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is The Kate Daly Show.
Maybe did a bad, bad thing. Maybe did a bad, bad thing. Maybe did a bad, bad thing. Maybe did a bad, bad thing.
You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart was going to break in two?
Welcome back, Kate Daly Show. Talking about all the things mainstream won't cover. And boy, just happens that there's so much that they don't cover. So much. Interesting. So we're going to have some thoughts on Assange. What is his true role? And some speculation there. And also talking a little bit more about Sri Lanka and the events. And sort of like with Samantha Powers, like, this gets interesting when they were blaming who did this, you know, and who they thought did this. They said international network. And I thought that was kind of interesting language. Yeah, international network. So go right ahead, Susan. Go right ahead.
Oh, well, what was really fascinating, too, is you wonder what is going on in this country. So many of these countries have terrible trafficking problems, human trafficking problems. And one of the things, interesting things she said in her speech And she was a former Obama associate, Samantha Powers, and she mm-hmm. was on his presidential campaign. But many people may remember that she called Hillary a monster, and so she had to resign from that. But she ended up as the ambassador to the UN
mm-hmm.
From 2013 right. to 2017. And she mentioned something occurring in that country. She said, "I think of the mothers I've met in your country who clutch the weather-faded photos of their missing sons and daughters, begging people to hear their cries, or the heads of household needing money to feed their families after the war." This missing sons and daughters, there have been thousands of young boys and young men who've just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And the speculation is that this is a big trafficking center. And so they've actually started an organization there. It was started by a mother who was a doctor, and her son, who was 8 years old, went missing.
Mm-hmm.
And she just said, you know, this is an epidemic, and we have to figure out what's going on. So the fact that Samantha Powers addressed that, very, very interesting. It was called the Mother's Front, a network to mm-hmm. trace down all of these missing children and young men.
Right.
And very, very odd. The other thing she mentioned, just as we were talking about, was telecommunications.
Mm-hmm.
She says, long before this recent phase in his career, the man she was honoring, he was Minister of Post and Telecommunications. Mm-hmm. It was Mangala who spearheaded the privatization of Sri Lanka's telecommunications industry. This initiative introduced competition, knocked down barriers, allowing Sri Lankans to have more phones, so it's just not the privilege.
Yep, there comes telecom, so yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it says now, she said, today Sri Lanka has one of the highest number of phones per person in all of Asia. And despite being a country of 21 million, Sri Lanka is apparently home to 34 million cell phone subscriptions. So then you really start to see, I mean, people do businesses on their phone. You know, you're poor, you don't have a computer, you have a phone, you can run a business.
Right.
She said these tools are going to be decisive in global development going forward, but governments must confront their dark uses as well as their boundless possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that she's talking about trafficking and segues into telecommunications,
right?
Very interesting that she's there mm-hmm. outing and talking about all these things.
And so Samantha Power is calling for Facebook, for the information, you know, whirlwind of Facebook to be shut down. And of course, right after, Sri Lankan government blocks all social media and imposes a curfew following the deadly blast. Samantha Power's husband.
Yeah, the timing.
Yes.
Yeah, the timing on that is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And that she said after hate speech and conspiracy
that was in March.
About Muslims
mm-hmm.
disseminated on media led to violence and destructions.
Right.
Your government officials made a profound observation that I believe the entire world must heed. The germs are ours, but Facebook is the wind.
Oh,
in other
gosh.
Words,
yeah.
too powerful. Yep. Have to shut it down.
Yep. And she said that before the bombing. So then Sri Lankan government blocks social media, imposes curfew following the deadly blast so people couldn't communicate out anything. Her husband is famous for talking about the fact that the government infiltrates social media to a huge extent so they can control which conspiracy theories, and they don't want the true ones to get out. So they are on there trying to infiltrate and act like regular people and try and curve the conversation to go a certain way. And away from true
yes.
conspiracies. Isn't that
yes.
crazy?
The people would have their fingers in the pie of other people who want to discuss real-life events.
Yeah.
And they're willing to institute regulations and heavy fines for failing to remove hate speech.
Right.
And greatly restricting the ability of advertisers. And rethinking the type of anonymity afforded to users so as to cut down on the spreading of lies with impunity.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, that sounds just like China. China said, no, we want everybody's identity to be known. We want everyone to have a social standing so that we can grade them and rank them,
mm-hmm.
you know, credit. Remember the social
yes.
credit in
yes.
China. So.
Yeah. Oh, I just got the. Yeah.
This is. Yeah, it's just, I think these countries, I think mm-hmm. they are overtaken by the fact that the people collectively are now possibly more powerful than the government leaders. They're able to keep track of more things. They notice more
mm-hmm.
things. And that just puts government leaderships, especially corrupt ones, on notice, and they're fighting back with regulations.
Yeah. It was, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, the bombing is this, you know, were there codes in this to give out some messages too? And there was a child that went to Sidwell School, and I talked about Sidwell School, same actual agenda that they teach as China 2030 2030. And then also that is their sister schools in China, and all the elite, Chelsea Clinton, Al Gore's kids, Sasha and Malia, everybody has gone to Sidwell. And this is basically what Sidwell's about. It's about everything global, and they work with China quite a bit. And so one of the four Americans that was killed was a child, a fifth grader from Sidwell School. And it was really odd the way that they talked about him being abroad. Was it not?
Yeah, they just said he's studying over in Sri Lanka. He's 11.
As a child.
They didn't say, and this wasn't a letter to the parents, the other children at the school. He's studying in Sri Lanka. Instead of saying his family has moved to Sri Lanka.
Right.
Well,
yeah, it was odd language. I know billionaire Anders Paulson's kids died there too. This one, Kieran D'Souza, died there as well. And that last name has some bearing because there's some history attached to that name too. Is kind of strange. All the little ties are kind of strange, and I don't know what happened over there. I'm not even going to speculate. I can't even guess or speculate at this point. But I think when you are looking as a whole, when you look at what Sri Lanka did right after, are some of these countries, are they being talked to set precedences for information gathering and information blockage? Are we looking at like New Zealand and Sri Lanka and saying, okay, what happened before and what happened after the events that just happened in the news? What's going on? Because that's what's so curious to me, you know?
Right. Well, and you can see that pattern, and now we should be watching for that pattern. And it's interesting that Powers finished her speech by noting that we all know the best is yet to come.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had this, tremendously devastating, epic. And we remember that attack in France where hundreds of people were killed and the terrorists went wild in the streets. So it does send a shockwave through really the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
We're all shocked. And in that state of shock, people are sincerely concerned. And our government leaders step in to take advantage of that. And that happens, obviously, all over the world. We just saw it happen in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And so that emotional vulnerability, which they are taking advantage of our genuine concerns. And I believe the same thing is also happening with global warming.
Yeah.
They create this real deep grief. They call it climate grief, that you're grieving about the future. And then they exploit that.
Right. I've seen a lot of people sharing Saint Greta, this child that is going on and on about the global warming crisis, and saying how afraid she is. Man, I wish somebody would tell her the truth. We're seeing it now through using kids and things like that. But back to your point about Mother's Front, Samantha Powers was just giving an award to Mengele about, and he was the one that actually formed Mother's Front in 1990, like you said. There's some interesting liaisons between these people. And I always want to keep our eye on those that are not necessarily in the helm of government, but used to be, and they're out in the world. Hey, even Obama, out in the world with these meetings and these, and I'm not saying everything's nefarious. All I'm saying is keep an eye on where they go and what happens before major events in the news, because I think that's the interesting part.
Right. And we know Michelle Obama was in France.
Yeah.
Very fascinating. And John Podesta was in New Zealand within
right
the
before.
Week of that happening.
That's
just a data point to notice.
Yes.
And you have to start noticing. And then you can discount it if you think, well, that may have been a coincidence.
Yep. And the vying for information. the vying for the blockage of information one to another, and to kind of keep a hold of that so that information doesn't go out. Because when the pictures of New Zealand went out and they were different than the pictures of the scene in the video, people started really questioning. They can't have that. They don't want that. And I also want to talk about Assange for a minute, too. There's a theory that they could have gone in any time to get him, but it was actually right now for maybe... what, star witness purpose, maybe witness protection? Kind of an interesting theory about Assange. What's your take?
Julian Assange is actually such a fascinating character. He mm-hmm. is almost like this gnome-like person. They say he's got terrible body hygiene. Mm-hmm. And right. There was a new president in Ecuador, mm-hmm. and within several weeks, he expelled
They took
Assange,
money.
And yeah. it just coincided mm-hmm. with the Mueller report having come out.
And the money. Don't forget the money, Susan, because they took a huge amount in loans, and then all of a sudden they let him go, right? Or they had him picked up?
Right.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, so there's these transition in powers mm-hmm. in power in Ecuador, who was controlling the embassy where he lived. And then he shortly thereafter got expelled, mm-hmm. or they allowed the British right. government to come in and retrieve him. But I do think he is going to be working, cutting a deal, so to speak, and spilling what he knows. Mm-hmm. Because basically, I don't know how much WikiLeaks, I haven't followed them recently, if mm-hmm. they're still putting out stuff or whatnot, but you know that he knows how to play the game mm-hmm. and has... leverage mm-hmm. right. and information. And so I expect to hear a lot more from him.
Department of Justice is right now saying, well, this could be violations toward Espionage Act, which is the death penalty. That's an interesting thing. And when you have warring factions of the deep state that don't want information to get out, I found that to be interesting because they've never proven that he actually did what he did with Chelsea Manning.
Right.
They only could charge him with, we think he might have, not that he did. And that's getting lost in the media right now. So back in 2010. So I just wanted to bring that up again. We have to go to a break. But Susan, I really appreciate you and all your research and work. Thank you so much. Thank
You're
you.
You're so welcome. Thank
oh, absolutely. 100%. So I'm gonna have Glenn Tate on right now. We'll have Glenn Tate on the show. He wrote the book 299 Days. You're going to like this. He talks about what happens after a huge event. What do we do? He wrote a whole novel series about it. Pretty amazing. Be right back with Glenn Tate. Don't go anywhere.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing.
Hi there. Welcome back. You're listening to the Kate Daly Show, last segment of the show. Big thank you to Susan for coming on. And right now I have Glenn Tate, and I'm really happy to have Glenn back. I had him a few years ago, and we talked about his book series. And I'm really happy to have you back, Glenn, because I think your book is very important, and it's a real important book for people to kind of understand what happens after. Something that we don't talk about a whole lot, if something were to happen, huge and devastating. Kind of reminds me of the show Revolution. Did you ever see that, Glenn?
I did not. I'm familiar with it, though. It's
yeah.
been described to me.
It's that was a show. Boy, I was sad that they took it off the air. You know, it really was kind of a demonstration in the very things that you talk about. The book series is 299 Days. Tell us why you were drawn to do this topic with this book series. What drew you into this and discussing this? What happens after?
The Easter Bunny and everyone out there saying, oh, my goodness, this guy's crazy. We're listening to a crazy guy, but no, it's not like that. My wife at the time was uh-huh. very reluctant about all this and thought that there was something wrong with me for, you know, preparing for a bad event that we all mm-hmm. hope doesn't happen, by the
right.
way.
Right, sure.
And so I had to have an explanation to her reluctant perspective mm-hmm. about why all this stuff showed up in the garage one day, you know, the ammunition and the food and all of that. And so I came, and I had to let her save face, because mm-hmm. that's the polite thing to do.
Sure.
And so I came up with, the explanation was going to be, honey, the Easter Bunny dropped this stuff off. And that way I would diffuse the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I came up with what I called the Easter Bunny speech, which was basically in my head explaining to her why I did all this preparation stuff, what it means, and that it's not the end of the world and that life will go on and they'll be a restoration, which we'll talk about in a moment. But mm-hmm. And so then I did it on a post-it note with some bullet points. And I'm a lawyer. I present mm-hmm. information for a living. And it kept growing, and it became a page. And then and I'd never written fiction before, and I just kind of wrote up this dialogue. Mm-hmm. And we don't usually talk about religion. I believe that mm-hmm. this was, you know, God was sure. moving my fingers on the keyboard, because I'm not smart enough mm-hmm. to do what ended up being kind of an amazing work, 4,000
yes.
pages,
yes.
10 books. The audiobooks take 90 hours. That's how much content there is. And there's this huge story basically about me, the suburban guy. Olympia, Washington is where I used to live, mm-hmm. and it's a very, very liberal place, state capital of Washington State in the Seattle area, and how there's economic and political upheaval, but it's a partial collapse. There's nothing crazy. There's no cannibalism mm-hmm. or zombies or meteors mm-hmm. striking the earth or anything nutty like that. In fact, I look back at what I wrote a few years ago, and I'm sorry to say this. I hope I don't sound immodest, but I predicted a lot of stuff.
And there's yes,
a lot
you did.
There's a lot. I mean, uh-huh. you've read the books. You know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, yes, you
general
did.
General strokes and outlines of mm-hmm. how, you know, kind of, I was using Venezuela as sort of a model in my mind mm-hmm. and then applying it to the American variations on that there would be. So I didn't sit down to write this with some big message, and I know this sounds crazy, but it started off as a post-it note, and it ended up being 4,000 pages. I could not stop writing this.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that I was being driven by somebody else to get the message out of,
right.
number one, preparedness, but number two, no wackiness. We don't
right.
have any crazy conspiracy theories. There's
right.
nothing like that. And then the part that my books touch on that I don't think anyone else really does, and that's the restoration. What happens
mm-hmm.
after this collapse and after the good guys win? Because I think the good guys will win, because mm-hmm. we are, I know it sounds obnoxious, but we're better people. We treat people better.
Well,
we're
yes.
productive.
If you're
right?
religious, even, you're going to understand that. So, you know, the good wins out. And that gives me a lot of solace. It's kind of like when you were talking about the three groups, right? The loyalists, the undecided, and the oblivious, you know, the different groups that people got into and what they turned to as a guide, which was the United States Constitution. And I think that that's an important thing. I think it's important for people to understand that, as much as it gets railed on and as much as people think it says what it doesn't say and they try to change it every 5 seconds, that actually can serve as a guide for the kind of world that you want to live in. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, and I play it out by applying it to the small community where the story takes place, which
mm-hmm.
is Pierce Point
right.
in Washington. And you see slowly but surely how this community develops, and they come up with some rules. There are some challenges, obviously. There's
mm-hmm.
criminals and all of that.
Sure.
And there's loyalists. There's bad government people.
Mm-hmm.
There are good government people, too, because I think that's how it is. There's good people and bad people everywhere.
Right.
And so you see how it builds up, and pretty soon it goes from just having some meetings at the Grange Hall and figuring out how they're going to have security patrols. And then you end up with a library,
mm-hmm.
and you end up with a mail system, a postal kind of system around there, and there's all kinds of commerce that starts springing up, because that's what happens everywhere. I didn't invent this. I'm not brilliant. I'm not Nostradamus. I looked at examples around the world. Even in Venezuela, as messed up as that place is right now, there's still private enterprise in a sense. People are bartering and trading and doing these things. This is how human beings survive, and I looked at examples from around the world
mm-hmm.
and applied them in an American context, and this Pierce Point, it succeeds. It works because the patriots treat people fairly. They deal with criminals
mm-hmm.
rather firmly, but they treat people well, and they don't allow corruption and badness, and they get rid of gangs, and they do all these things that I think good patriots will do,
mm-hmm.
and stuff works. And then other communities around there say, oh my goodness, this is an example of what actually works.
Right.
And then the message is there. And that's how I think this collapse will happen. And I think the main thing is the rebuilding, the restoration, and getting on with life and not having a bunch of grudges. I look at the U.S. Revolutionary War as an example of how I hope it turns out.
Right.
And that is, instead of being like the French, who had, you know, massive terror campaigns against their opponents, and there's guillotines and all kinds of nastiness, the American Revolution was very, very rare in world history. Pardons were granted. The bad people moved to Canada, no offense to Canada, but the bad people, the Tories, moved to Canada, and we got on with things, and there was forgiveness. And again, this is not
moving on
pacified
yeah.
lollipops, everybody's great. I mean, if you commit crimes, you will be held accountable, period. But it's not going to be the Hatfields and the McCoys for the next 200 years, which is how a lot of other parts of the world and places in time, that's how they've dealt with it. And it doesn't work. You come out of it, you're, you know, look at France is still not recovered from that. So that's the good news of all this. It's a blueprint about how to get on with this and have a good, decent country, a republic.
Was the governments closer, more localized to certain areas? Because now that the government is so big, we're seeing a lot of people getting away with Clinton's, a lot of people getting away with a lot of stuff, right? And it's frustrating for us Americans. It's frustrating to see our legal system and government doing what government does, and they just keep growing it and with more control. So about the governance that we were striving for after this big event happens. What is that like, and how does that work to our benefit?
Great question. It looks, first of all, it's described in detail. By the way, in a story form, you're just reading along, and these characters are doing these things, and these things are happening. It's not like some manual, right? Like how to govern after a collapse, you know?
Yeah, it's
technical manual.
It's not dry. It's called 299 Days, by the way. I just wanted to point that out again. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the model is how things were after the U.S. Revolutionary War. That's my model for things. How small towns used to largely govern themselves, even later, obviously, in the Revolutionary War. It with some modern updates. I mean, you know, we have modern communications now, and that changes some things. And so that is the basic model. It's people being accountable, and the political part of all this is that after the collapse. Well, I should back up. During the collapse, people see all kinds of corruption and badness and garbage, and that kind of leads to the collapse. When the good guys win, we have a chance to start over again, and we've learned our lessons. We're not going to have big government. In Book 9, talks about how the new constitution for the new state of New Washington is written, and there'll be lots of little states and chunks of states and all of that other stuff. And it has things like a 5% cap, 5% of the state's GDP cap on government spending. And it's hard written into the Constitution. And that's sort of detailed, but that's an example. It's not, believe me, it's not how to write a Constitution. And we learned from it, and we're not going to let government grow. People are going to be responsible for themselves and accountable. And it's going to be what we all want. The ways we sit there, and everybody listening has done this probably even today. You sit there and you think, how would I fix this thing? Well, if I could be king for a day, what would that look like? I think the answer is pretty much 299 days as far as like making things better. And it's not Pollyannish. I mean, there are real problems.
No, I don't think so. I actually think. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, I don't want people to think this is all, you know, like some thing where we're all going to just be good people.
Sing kumbaya.
Be awesome.
Sure.
Yeah, human history indicates that's not how things go. You have to fight to win, and then once you win, you have to stay good and decent, and there are pressures on human beings to not do that.
Right.
And you just have to have ways and methods in place to reward good and punish bad. I know that sounds simplistic.
Oh, I don't think
but
so. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think
so
it sounds simplistic. And I think one point that you make, too, is the barter system and how economy can still flourish, even in the face of something very big that happens, whether it's an EMP or whether it's an earthquake, that the bartering system was still a system that should be engaged, because that's usually that's all you've got anyway. I mean, what else do you have? So how big a part does that play?
Oh, a really big part, especially as things start off slowly. And I mentioned Pierce Point. I mean, there was, well, the cash was worthless. There were freedom cards, which were made up electronic money that was basically your 401ks were sort of stolen by the government, and you got a little bit of it on this card, and you got to buy food from the government, basically. So that really isn't, you know, commerce. That's welfare. It's the opposite of commerce.
So
The bartering starts, and then the barter gets bigger. There's a big role for gold and silver in this new economy. And all these little states, sub-states, for example, rural western Washington is the state of New Washington.
So interesting.
I'll give you an idea about size. They have some currency, but it's backed by gold and or silver, so it's real money. And they just start, and then there's sort of a consolidation of currencies as there's a regional government. Now there's sort of a Pacific Northwest or maybe like a, you know, Utah, Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico kind of currency.
Liaison.
And
yeah.
It just keeps growing
and growing.
And it's all based on reality and hard truth.
It's a
no more goofiness
series.
Like
well,
we have now.
It's a great series. 299 days. The reason I want people to read this is because we have to think beyond. Sometimes we just kind of end at how do you get through a month, the first month of a crisis? But this actually goes so far beyond, and that's what I was always so impressed with. I know we only have like a minute and a half, but I was just so impressed with the fact that you took it there. You thought it out. You were really thinking about what would happen. How would we be? Right now we have huge divides in propaganda. Overloads and who and what level of propaganda people believe in. And I'm hoping that that diminishes a little bit, probably wishful thinking, but I'm hoping it diminishes a little bit so people can come together on a lot of different issues. If something like this were to happen and come together and see the bigger picture, but like less government, all of these things that we go to adopt in this book, 299 days, it's 10 books. It's really amazing. I think people really need to read this just to get your wheels turning on what you would do, what your participation would be, how would you interact, because he really goes there. And you also have a show. We have about a minute. You also have a show, Glenn, and I want you to talk about this. It's a podcast.
You bet. It's called Prepping 2.0, pardon me, Prepping 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
Website is Prepping 2.0. I do it with my new wife, fellow prepper author, Shelby Gallagher, who writes the book series A Great State, which takes place in rural Colorado, you know.
Awesome.
And so, yeah, Prepping 2.0, it's a podcast, and we're also on a bunch of radio stations in the West. And it's really fun and good information. We have great guests. The guests are what drive it.
I bet.
And a lot of fun's taken off. It's huge. And I encourage everyone to listen to Prepping 2.0.
Prepping 2.0. You got to check this out. Glenn Tate. And also the book series, because I always want to be forced to think deeper than what I've been trained to do so, because we're not trained to think very deep. We lack depth. And I think one thing that this book does, or this book series does, is force people to contemplate who they would be, what they would do. And that's what I think. I think you are very guided to do this book. And this book is very necessary for people, because are things coming? I think so, and I know you do too.
Exactly.
I think things
have
are coming.
Plan.
Yes.
Have a plan.
I'd
and
rather think
be entertained.
Yeah.
Be entertained and read a nice story with interesting people while you're having this plan laid out for you that you can take or leave, or take parts of it, or
that's what I
or
thought
not,
was
or,
cool.
Hey,
yeah.
Everyone has free will.
That's what I thought was so cool. Glenn Tate, thank you. Thanks for writing the series.
Thank you.
It's been so popular, and it's been getting so many rave reviews. I just commend that you just did this. I think it's fantastic. Get 299 days and check out his podcast. I love that you did that, and I'll do a show with you as far as that goes on prepping. I'll have you on a podcast, an off-the-air podcast we'll put up. I think it'd be great. I just want all your intel. I think it's awesome. Thanks, Glenn Tate. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Be faithful. Be fearless. See you back here on Monday. Everybody have a great weekend.
It's hard to believe that only once a year